Today's episode of Keeping It Real Podcast is brought to you by Nest Egg. Looking to add value to your investor clients? Recommend Nest Egg, a Chicago-based app that has everything your clients need to manage their rentals in only minutes a month. Nest Egg is the only app that gets things done at the rental, including on-demand maintenance and services like tenant placement and snow removal. Also, Nest Egg is free to use, which makes your clients' investments 20 to 30% more profitable. Join Nest Egg today by downloading the app or by visiting nestegg.rent. That's nestegg.rent. Use promo code Keeping It Real to get your first hour of maintenance for free. And now, on to the show. Hello and welcome to another episode of Keeping It Real, the largest podcast made by real estate agents for real estate agents. My name is DJ Paris. I am your host and guide through the show. And if you're brand new to the show, here's what we do. We talk to top 1% producers all over the country and ask them how they grew their business so that other realtors can learn from their success. You probably already knew that. This probably isn't your first episode. So thank you for letting me do that. But a couple of quick things before we get started with our episode with Ben Lalas. First, tell a friend if you know even one other real estate agent that could benefit from listening to interviews from top producers like Ben, shoot this over. You can listen to every episode we've ever done, keepingitrealpod.com. By the way, new website is coming in about a week and it'll be a lot easier to navigate and find the episodes you're looking for. So I'll let you know once that's live. Also, we're adding video. So all of the episodes going forward will be video podcasts. So not only will you be able to listen like you are now, but you'll also be able to watch our guests on YouTube and some other areas we're going to be sharing that. So be on the lookout for that. And the best place to find out exactly what's going on with our podcast is on Facebook. Visit us at facebook.com/keepingitrealpod. Again, Keeping It Real Pod. And every single day we post an article that we find online written by some expert, industry expert, about how you can help grow your business. And of course, we also post all of our episodes. So please go there and engage with the other fans of the show. And also send us your feedback. Any guests you think we need to talk to, any ideas you have to make the show better, we are thrilled to hear that. So you can always send us a message through the keepingitrealpod.com website, Facebook, a million ways to find us. All right, guys, enough of me. Let's get on to our amazing interview with the great Ben Lalas. Today on the show, we have Ben Lalas from Compass. You can visit Ben, by the way, at his team website, which is benlalas.com. Ben started his real estate career flipping houses in Humboldt Park and Hermosa. Not wanting to deal with real estate brokers or general contractors, he went out and became licensed in both. Throughout the years, working for himself grew organically into working for others, and brokering is now his full-time job. Because of his background in construction, clients find that having an agent on their side who understands the nuts and bolts, literally, of a home is exceptionally valuable. 2019 was Ben's first year as a full-time real estate agent, and he and his team did an incredible whopping $23.5 million in production. I cannot begin to say what a big deal that is. Again, before we get started, because I always forget to mention, before I bring Ben on, Ben and his team are looking for brokers. So if you're a broker and you're interested in joining a winning team at Compass, Ben would love to speak with you. Also, they have an admin position open as well. So reach out to Ben at benlalas.com. And anyway, welcome to the show, Ben.
Thank you so much. I'm super excited to be on here with you.
I am super excited. Ben, when we were getting ready to get started, goes, I make everyone on my team listen to this show. So I was really honored to hear that. Thank you for being part of it.
Sure. Shout out to Lauren. I'm sure she's listening right now. She's on my team.
So Ben, you've had a tremendous amount of success in a very short amount of time in as being a broker, and your team has grown significantly since you guys have started. So can you talk a little bit about how you got into real estate?
Sure. I kind of wanted to say first, thank you for having me on. I think this podcast is extremely valuable to brokers in the city and, you know, nationwide. Honestly, it's unbelievable that you've put this together to, you know, for brokers to kind of share all of this useful stuff for free. It's tremendously valuable.
Oh, thank you so much. We really appreciate it. And really, it's all because of you guys. So you guys get all the thanks. But I'm glad that it's helpful and appreciate the kind words there. But yeah, tell us how you got into real estate.
Sure. So I was actually interning with a construction company. It's LG Development Group. They do business as LG Construction now. They're pretty reputable here in the city. But in 2009, they were a little bit smaller and I was interning for them. And we all know what happened in 2009. Sure. And going into 2010, you know, I had some good experience learning how to build a home, you know, working there. And as the market completely tanked, you know, I recognized an opportunity to pick up some property very, very cheaply in, you know, the West Humboldt Park and Hermosa neighborhoods. And, you know, thankfully my dad was able to spot me with a little seed money, and I'll actually never forget it. I bought my first house for $22,000 cash.
Wow.
And I walk in there and there's needles on the ground.
Oh no.
Yes. Other stuff that we don't need to mention. And then just an incredible amount of pickle jars just strewn about. So
for waste?
I have no idea, to be honest with you.
Oh, okay.
But I guess I didn't think of it like that. It just seemed like, I don't know, these people loved eating pickles. I don't know what the story was.
But were there any squatters in the property or?
No, it was boarded up. There were a lot of beds. So I think the bank finally got their act together and got everyone out. And there was, you know, it was a mess. And literally walking around, in hindsight, I should have been more careful, but I'm crunching around on these needles.
Oh no.
Yes. But long story short, we put in, like at the time, 40 or 50 grand. We were able to sell it. Let's just say I made a lot more than my salary interning just on that one flip. Wow. So I was like, okay, I guess this is what I am doing. So paid dad back, used the profits to kind of continue that game. So that kind of spawned into, from 2010 through 2014, I was doing 3 or 4 projects at a time. So depending on how fast they turned, it was really good there for a second.
Were you guys doing all flips or were you doing any buy and hold as well?
Yeah. So I actually still have some stuff that we held, that we picked up in 2010 and 2011, but the majority of the business was to, you know, fix, flip and sell as fast as possible. So as I was kind of getting that experience, I went out and got my general contractor's license because I wanted to cut out a middleman, which is kind of sacrilege to hear that coming from a real estate broker, but wanted to cut out the middleman on the general contracting side.
Sure.
And I did, and that had its own growing pains, but eventually figured it out. But as the properties were getting ready to sell, I might be showing listeners my type A personality, but I also wanted to take control of the selling side. So I got my real estate license as well.
Also very smart. And by the way, for everyone who's listening, this is a very common path for people that are real estate investors. The general contractor side seemingly makes sense, but also just the saving on the commissions alone is a huge thing to get your broker license, even if you never really want to work with the public and only do your own transactions. Makes perfect sense.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm not going to say I did everything perfectly the first even 5 times, but I mean, that's what's good about getting in early. You can make those mistakes with fewer repercussions.
Sure.
And yeah, you know, it was a good first step for me there.
And then how did you transition from investments, real estate investments, to being a more traditional broker and working more with the public, buyers, sellers, that sort of thing?
Sure. So I don't think it's too atypical what my process was. I have a lot of friends and family here in Chicago. I was born and raised in Chicago, or in the suburbs. I was born in Glenview. And, you know, friends and family saw what I was doing, and, you know, I wasn't shy about telling people what I do for a living, which I think is half the battle. But people began asking me to do their kitchens and bathrooms, and they also asked me for help renting and then eventually buying. So it happened very, very organically. So for the first, say, 2-3 years while I had my real estate license, that only accounted for maybe 5 or 10% of my true income. And then over time, I saw that gradually shifting, and I found myself being drawn to real estate brokering more so than the construction side. And it, from there, it just was a very gradual shift to full-time real estate brokerage.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's funny you say gradual because, of course, it was a gradual transition. But then once you decided to go full brokerage, you know, just the numbers you did alone, and we really, is it okay if I talk about your numbers? Are you comfortable with me sharing that?
No problem at all.
Yeah, this is great. Ben's a very humble person, but this is really something that needs to be shared. And I'll brag for you because it's so cool. In 2017, he and his team, they did $4 million in production, which is a very modest sum. And then the next year they did $14 million. So they basically almost quadrupled their production in 1 year. Can you talk about, well, actually, before we get to that, and this only is so timely because 30 minutes before we started our podcast, I had a woman who is actually in the process of getting her real estate license, who's at our office. One of the schools teaches here. So a lot of times the students come over and chat with me before they finish up their classes. And they always ask, okay, what do you recommend I do once I pass my test and join a firm? And I always say, well, listen to the podcast because people like Ben obviously, you know, will tell you exactly what to do because I sit here at a desk all day and I'm not out there producing. So I just real quickly, only because it just came up, what advice do you have for a brand new broker who's looking to get in? Because you've done leasing, you've done sales, you've done investments. You know, what do you recommend for people these days?
Sure. So, you know, I have newer brokers who are on my team that ask me the same question when they come on board, right? And my advice is actually pretty simple. So everyone is good at something, right? Yes. And for example, I have someone on my team, he came over, he was actually an analyst. He has a very analytical mind, very good with math. I actually have someone on my team who comes from a remodeling background, also kind of like me. And I tell people, lean on your strengths and, you know, make that what your, you know, your message is about. You don't need to know everything, but if you know one thing, that's good enough. Yeah. So I would say lean on whatever that strength may be. For example, mine was general contracting. So any question I got from a buyer or seller, I always made it about the physical home because that's what I knew how to talk about. And that's what I was comfortable with. So I would say that is one. And then two is whatever strategy, you know, it is that they come up with. And if they join a team, you know, listen to your team lead or your mentor and kind of, you know, come up with a strategy. But after you do come up with a strategy, I think it's pretty simple from there. It's do the work every single day.
Yeah.
And period. That's the end of it. You have a system. If it's sitting at a desk and doing flyers or calling, or if it's Zillow, it's do the work every single day, follow up nonstop, and then wake up in the morning and do it again and again and again. It's simple as that.
Yeah, it's simple. I always say it's simple and hard, right? It's like push-ups. I remember when I first started working with a personal trainer years ago, they went through all my goals and what I was looking to accomplish in the training sessions. And then he's like, okay, we can get started. And he says, I need you to do 40 push-ups. I was like, push-ups, that's not very exciting. Like, I can do that on my own. He's like, are you doing it on your own? And I was like, no. He goes, then do the push-ups. And he goes, and I realized, oh yeah, push-ups are a really good exercise. And every day, you know, every time I went in to see him, we started with push-ups because it's just a good daily discipline. And so that same idea obviously applies to building a real estate practice, is put your head down, figure out what your daily disciplines are, and rinse and repeat every day.
Exactly. And that kind of ties into, I think, as early as possible, if you're able to, even if there's 10 people in your CRM, in a client relationship management tool, if someone is smart enough to get that figured out as early as possible And to have that be the basis for how they're doing their follow-up or their marketing efforts or whatever the case may be, having that organizational tool early, I think I wish someone told me, like I use Salesforce now, and I'm telling you the first year after I implemented it, there's money that you're just literally, you know, it's slipping through the cracks without you even knowing it.
Yeah, I agree. It's, and a lot of times brokers too, they look at their contact list, the, you know, or their CRM, and they say, okay, what am I like, how should I reach out? What should I do? And I always say, well, you know, there's a million reasons to reach out. Even if it's somebody's birthday, that's a reason to reach out. Mm-hmm. And if mortgage rates drop, call everyone you know who owns a home and say, hey, I don't know your mortgage situation. It's really none of my business. But in case you didn't know, rates have dropped. It might be a good idea to refinance. Call your lender. If you don't have a good one, I'll refer you to someone. But anything that adds value, and a birthday announcement adds value. But just have a system, have a reason to contact them and consistently add value. And you're right. Ryan D'April comes on once a month, and he always says 16% of the people you know are transacting in real estate in the next 12 months. And the question is, how many of those 16% are you going to capture? And if you don't stay in touch, you know, people just forget that that's what you do.
I would even take it a step further. You don't necessarily even need to, and in best case scenario, you're reaching out on a regular basis and you have a system for that. But I tell the people on my team, like, put everyone in your CRM and we have a system for how they're supposed to or how I'd like to see them reach out. But sure, it counts that their name is in front of your eyes on a regular basis. So you're thinking about them. And then, you know, when the opportunity is there that you can reach out via text, email, whatever the case may be, at least you've been thinking about them and you're able to put something, you know, cohesive together to put in front of them.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So I would love to know. So you guys had this huge growth in like a 1 year period. Is there any one thing that really exploded that growth, or was it just, hey, we just put our head down and we did our push-ups every day and then all of a sudden, well, that, I mean, but really, I'm sure that's probably the real answer, but you had such a big growth. I was just curious if there was any one event that really spurred it, or it was just, no, we just did our work every day.
Yeah, so I think there's a few answers to the question. I'll make it as concise as possible. But, you know, we went from 4 million to 14 million. And a big part of that was my attention was on my general contracting business. And as my attention became more focused on real estate brokerage, you know, that alone, you know, just having the work ethic and applying it full force, into one avenue, that helped. But along with that, early on, I recognized that my value was on bigger picture stuff. So I put an assistant in place really, really early. And I know I'm not the first person to say that. I think that's one of the main takeaways that many of the top producers in the city have said on the podcast.
Sure.
So that, coupled with having a really robust CRM so that leads aren't slipping through the cracks. And then, frankly, I invested in Zillow in some capacity. I spent some serious money on there, and I had a system in place where we ended up being among the top in the country for lead conversion on Zillow.
Wow. And it's, I'm really glad you're mentioning this, because I love Zillow as a company. I know a lot of brokers have mixed feelings, but I think they're awesome. And and people who purchase leads from Zillow, and who are successful, obviously Ben is, and his team, obviously one of the most successful teams in the country, with Zillow leads. And they will tell you that even though that lead might be, you know, other people might be seeing that lead, there really isn't that much competition. If you have a system to work those leads, the average broker who gets a lead like that maybe tries to follow up one or two times and then drops the lead. And I'm sure, and Ben knows, no, it's sometimes there's many phone calls, many phone calls before that lead actually converts.
Well, I mean, I'm still working Zillow leads from 2017, some of which ignore you for a year. And then, you know, our CRM, we apply a certain priority to them and leave a little note in my calendar to reach out to them in, you know, June 2020 or you know, and you just follow up then. You can ignore it until then.
I was at an event. Yeah, that is so true. I was at an event with Matt Larracy where he was speaking. I need to, by the way, get him on the show, of course. But
yes, you do.
Yeah. He's for those of you not in the Chicagoland area, he's a top broker here as well. And he was like pounding the table at going, you never give up on a lead. You never, ever give up on a lead. And it was a good reminder, just as Ben just said, you just always follow up because the slow and steady wins the race. And, you know, oftentimes people's decision-making process. I mean, same thing for me. I recruit more than, I mean, I don't produce at all, but I recruit. There's people that go, I met with you a year ago and I'm finally ready to switch over. And I go, oh, great. You know, because I've stayed in touch with them over the time and everyone's timeline is different. You never give up on a lead and have a, and if you have a CRM, like Ben has Salesforce, which is like the preeminent CRM in across all industries, you can automate a lot of this and, you know, it's really, really important, but you never, ever give up, right?
Going back to what you were saying about not giving up is we have a team policy that a lead isn't dead and we have a priority literally called dead. And they're not dead until they tell you to F off in some regard. Via text, yeah. Via email, like stop calling me, stop texting me.
Yeah.
And that's fine. And you know, you have to have a little bit of a thick skin, but you don't get what you don't ask for.
Yeah. So that is an incredible growth that you guys had, and continue to have. And then a year after hitting 14 million, which is almost a 400% increase. Now then you went almost and almost doubled it again. And last year you guys did almost 24 million, which is just, again, it was there any thing else that changed, or was it like, no, this is just what happened as a result of us following our process?
So there's a few things that I would like to credit it, like how I would like to credit it. And I think adding social media to our ordinary push really, really helped. So if, I don't know if DJ, you've seen the video content that I put out regularly. We do a once a week video post that's long form, and then we chop it up and put it across all other platforms.
Yes, I have. Yep.
So I think that coupled with, you know, our ordinary efforts, social media is an interesting game. And a lot of people, I think, are thinking about it the wrong way. People expect strangers, for example, to reach out and say, hey, I saw your video because of XYZ and I want to work with you. But I think of it a little bit differently. And that's raising the floor kind of on retention of existing clients and, you know, friends, family, referrals. And also staying in front of those people regularly. So, and that also helps with our, you know, our Zillow investment, because I really believe that the second I get off the phone with someone, they're Googling my name.
Oh, of course.
And they're going to see 20, 30 videos of me talking about real estate. And, you know, we have a very targeted demographic that we're going after. And, you know, I'm speaking directly to them. So, you know, I get connected via live Zillow connection, and they have no idea who I am. They Google me and they're like, oh, like this guy actually knows what he's doing. And that legitimizes you. So whereas I was losing, and I don't know if these numbers are accurate, but I feel like I'm picking up an additional 10 or 20% of clients that would have just fallen by the wayside just by the social media efforts that we're doing.
Yeah, the videos are such a strong and powerful idea, and we oftentimes forget YouTube is the second biggest search engine on the planet. And you know, of course, people are going to search. They're going to look to see if you have reviews. They're going to look to see if you have video content. Google prioritizes video in their search results. So someone searches your name, and you have some videos that are, you know, Google has deemed important enough to show in the search results, and you show up. And of course, especially on a lead, a click to call lead from Zillow, live transfer, you know, while they're talking to you, they're gonna be like, oh, who's this Ben guy? And they're gonna look you up, and they're gonna want to make sure that, you know. And by the way, the other thing about having videos is it shows who you are physically. It's like, oh, that's a real person I'm talking to. Here's a video where I can see and hear him providing, you know, content, valuable content to me. And it humanizes you too as well, which is really smart.
So kind of piggybacking off of that, there was that car 2020 outlook thing that mm-hmm. happened last week or two ago. And they were talking about how millennials are, you know, they accounted for 50% of new mortgage origination in 2019.
Wow.
And kind of thinking about that, I have a story about, so there's this one guy, he's 28. And he actually found me on Instagram, and I just touted that that's not what it's about, finding strangers. But this is the story about, you know, one stranger who did reach out via Instagram. And I'm like, hey, like, how did you find me? And he's like, oh, I knew I needed a real estate broker, and I started my search on Instagram. And that blew my mind. So you're talking about how YouTube is the second largest search engine.
Yeah.
Millennials are using Instagram, using LinkedIn.
Right.
As the search engine.
Yes.
And I was floored. So, I mean, you can see the tide turning for millennials.
Yeah,
now.
For sure. And so for those of you who are listening, who are brokers thinking, okay, well, what do I do? The first thing you want to do, whatever social media platform you want to really focus in on, whether it's Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest. I mean, there's a lot of options, but what you want to do is create content that people who need your services want to know about. And I think oftentimes, and I'd be curious to get your opinion, I think brokers oftentimes only post about their successes, like here's a new listing. And I understand that, and I support that. I think that's great. But if that's all that you're doing, I think you're missing an opportunity to really tell people, you know, content that they might be interested in. So if you want a special, like I saw, I know you did a thing on Restaurant Row recently, which is really smart.
That was yesterday.
That was yesterday. Okay. Yeah. It's not today. So really, really smart. So Restaurant Week here in Chicago is coming up. It is a really good time. I'm sure that was not coincidental that it mm-hmm. coincided with that time. But, you know, if you tag your posts appropriately, whether it's Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, we tag our stuff too for the podcast. And sometimes people find us just through a tag. So that's, you know, we think, oh, if somebody hasn't following me on Instagram, they're not gonna find me. Oh no, people find you. Carrie McCormick, who comes on our show from At Properties, is like the queen of Instagram. And she puts 5,000 tags in every post. And I'm like, why do you do that? And I mean, I know why she does it. I go, does that really work? And she's like, oh my God. She goes, I get so many clients that way. People just find her because of the content she puts out. And obviously you're having similar success.
Yeah. And I think you kind of brushed on it. It's about putting out relevant content. But I think the part that people are missing is, again, I've kind of touted it, just putting your head down and doing the work. But you have to have a consistent approach to social media, anything that you're doing, but particularly social media, because consistency counts. The more you put it out there and the more relevant it is. I don't claim to know the algorithms behind all of these sites, but they prioritize you eventually, that they see that you're putting out consistent stuff, high quality stuff that's getting engagement. So yeah, I think putting out consistent, relevant content with a key on consistency is, I think, the key.
It is. And also understanding to the listeners, having them understand that social media, whether it's YouTube videos or cool Instagram posts or Instagram stories or videos or all of it, it's a marathon, and you are likely not to see results right away. And that's same thing with even doing this podcast, which is a form of, it's really a social media thing too. You know, we barely anybody knew about the show for the first year or so. And then, you know, eventually people said, oh, this content's helpful. And they told other people, and now here we are. But I just had to put my head down, and I still have to put my head down and do it. And I will tell you, back to your point about hiring an assistant, I forgot to mention this. I have an assistant as well for the podcast, and she's amazing. She's our casting director. And she keeps me on target, because this year our goal is to double the number of episodes that we've done, because left to my own devices, even though I've had helpers in the past, I just don't stay on target. And so for those of you who are listening who think, well, gosh, I can't afford to have an assistant, or I'm just not at the level, there are other options versus hiring somebody down the street from you or here locally, there are virtual assistants that you can hire. And they'll of course vary in quality, just like anyone. But if you find a good assistant, it doesn't necessarily, today need to break the bank. It's a very achievable thing. I've seen lots and lots of realtors hire virtual assistants, and it's for a very affordable price. And then it really helps them, do what they do best, which is typically working with clients. And Ben was saying, hey, we've got an analyst on our team, right? And so that analyst is probably best spent, analyzing deals and analyzing the market. And, you could even hire somebody to help you with prospecting. And there's lots of assistance you can get. And a lot of times people just think, well, I have to be a top producer first. It's like, well, it certainly helps that, you have the income to do it, but you can do it for pretty much on the cheap, because now we're in such a global gig economy that you have people from all over the world that'll help you for a very affordable pricing.
My first assistant was actually in the Philippines. I actually found her on Upwork.com. That was love back Upwork. In, I love it so much. Yeah. That was back in 2015. So we did buy and hold some property and I needed to rent it. And, at some point I had 3, 4, 5 rentals up on the market. And again, I property managed it myself.
Doing it all.
Yes. So I have all of these places up on Craigslist and Zillow, et cetera. And my phone just won't stop ringing. And I'm like, I cannot function like this. So I actually hired someone. She was in the Philippines. She worked Chicago hours. And I feel bad saying how much I paid her, but it was a living wage in the Philippines, but it was $3 an hour.
Yeah.
Just to give people an example. And that's not, I think you can still find people to work for that dollar amount now even.
I will share a similar story. So we talk about daily disciplines, and I have a series of disciplines things I struggle with, we'll say, that I should be doing on a daily basis. And for example, this is a really embarrassing one because I've had pets now for 11 years. I have a cat and a dog. And embarrassingly, this is partisan embarrassing, but my cat, not that the listeners care, but she needs to have her litter box cleaned twice a day. That's just her. She's particular that way. There's no way around it. If I don't do that, over time, she'll start peeing outside her box, and that creates a lot of problems. So I would love to say that it was just natural for me to clean the litter box twice a day. Sadly, I am not that on top of things. And also, I'll let myself off the hook. So I have, this is just an example of one of the reasons why I hired somebody to help with that. Now, she lives in the Philippines as well, and I pay her slightly more than Ben's, but this is many years later, but it's not much more. And I think I give her $7 or $8 an hour, but she only works a couple hours a week. But what she does is she calls me every morning, and she does about 10 things that she goes, did you remember to clean your cat box twice yesterday? And it sounds silly.
Wow.
But it's worth the money because by doing that, I avoid other problems. Also, my cat's happier. And she's not just calling for that. She says, hey, did you work out yesterday? Did you check on your finances? Did you, call your parents and things like that? So,
DJ, that's next level, man.
Well, I would love to tell you that I came up with this idea. I did not. I learned it, and I should give credit to basically the foremost leadership expert in the world, certainly in this country. His name is Marshall Goldsmith. He counsels presidents. He counsels top Fortune 500 companies. He's the guy. He's a PhD. He's a statistician. And I got a chance to see him speak somewhere, and he said he has an assistant, and this is a local assistant, and he probably pays them a fortune to do exactly what I just mentioned. And I was like, oh, that's really smart, because I struggle with a lot of stuff too. And so every morning for the last 2 years, my person name's Alva. She calls me every morning at 7:30. It's about a 90-second phone call, and she just rattles off a list of things, and it really helps me stay on target. So the point is that Ben and I have mentioned is there are people globally, worldwide that you can find, and that are, you will pay them a living wage. They will tell you how much they need, and then you can determine if that's acceptable or not. And boy, it's amazing the kind of help you can get these days. So think about, for everyone listening, where you struggle, and can that be, are there, I have a friend, this is embarrassing, so I won't mention their name, but I have a friend who pays somebody from the Philippines to call them every morning and wake them up. This person has a full-time job where she struggles to get to her work on time. So I mentioned this to her. I said, you know, there's probably a lot of solutions. I go, you can pay somebody to call you and bug you until you get out of bed. And she was like, well, that's really embarrassing. I was like, there's nothing embarrassing about that. Like, everybody struggles. So, and she pays somebody now, and she gets bugged until she gets out of bed, and she's never late. So it can work.
I might steal this idea from you.
Well, I stole it from Marshall Goldsmith, so feel free. Yeah, perfect. Yeah. And you know what? We talked about your social media. We should plug your social media. So Instagram obviously is a big one for you. By the way, you can get to all of Ben's social media on his website, BenLalez, BenLalez.com. But Ben, can you promote your Instagram handle as well?
Sure. We are Ben Lalez Real Estate. So LALEZ on Lalez, Ben Lalez Real Estate on Instagram. And you should be able to find, I mean, you say this all the time, DJ, if someone can't find you just by typing in your name on Google, you're doing something wrong.
That's a good, and by the way, if you don't have a social media presence, or you don't have time to post, or you don't have time to set up, you know, I always tell people too, like, what if you just hired somebody to help get you reviews? So in other words, you hire somebody who every time you have a closing, or every time you're working with a client, or whatever you think an appropriate time is to remind your clients that it would be helpful if they left a review on either Facebook, Google, Yelp, Zillow, wherever you want reviews. You could pay somebody a very small amount to, you know, reach out to your clients very politely and nice, and ask them, you know, whether it's email, phone call, whatever. You know, and that's a good point, that people are going to Google you. Even the referrals that you get are going to Google you, and you want to make sure that you have a robust number of reviews, or that you have some content on there that's helpful, so that people can see what you're all about. So you can hire people for that too.
Mm-hmm. And not to mention that there's services for social media, for example. We use Buffer. I don't know if you're familiar.
I use Buffer every day. Love Buffer.
So there you go. So you can put all your content for the week or month up there. It's tough for video, but any static content, you write the copy for each piece and set it and forget it.
Yeah. So we use Buffer for our Facebook page for our podcast, which is facebook.com/keepingitrealpod. And it's funny because Ben, you mentioned Buffer. So somebody from the Philippines who is not, her name is Rhea. So Rhea works on the show as well. And Rhea posts every day through Buffer, schedules all of our posts. Our intention is to post one valuable, or what we do is we find a valuable piece of content online, and we post it through Buffer, and we schedule it, and it takes her like an hour, and she gets all the posts done for the week. So Buffer is great because you can schedule all your postings and cross post among different social media networks, and it's awesome. Hootsuite's another great one for that purpose as well. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to ask you this, just because I thought this was a kind of an interesting, funny story. You had mentioned that when we were talking to you, but before we started, about that you had a final walkthrough, and basically somebody had come to move in when you noticed that during the final walkthrough.
Yeah.
Tell us that story.
Sure. So for all intents and purposes, it was a very normal transaction. I was on the buy side. It was a single family home in Irving Park. And couldn't honestly be more normal. So, you know, day of closing, we show up for the final walkthrough, and, you know, I'm with the listing agent, and, you know, the key's not working, and he's very confused. He's like, I was just here for the appraisal, you know, two weeks ago, the key worked fine. Like, it wasn't cold, so it wasn't frozen, and we had no idea what was going on. So, like, I don't know why he thought to knock, but he knocks on the door, and this like 15-year-old boy walks to the door and goes, can I help you? And we're like, what do you mean? Can you help us? Like, what are you doing here? He's like, oh, I live here. We're like, no, you don't. He's like, oh, thank you very much. Goodbye. And he closes the door in our face. And we're looking at each other like, what do we say?
Yeah, the best defense is a good offense, right? Yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, so we have no idea what just happened. We're looking at each other like, well, what world is this? And we realize quickly what happened, or we thought someone just broke in, or Lord knows what happens. So we call the police, and for once, they actually showed up like right away, because I don't know what I said, but It smelled fishy to them. So three cars pull up. They knock on the door. The guy opens the door again. And 5 minutes later, they're taking the guy out in handcuffs. And it was a young guy. It didn't seem like there was no violence or anything like that going on. But so they take him into the squad car. He rolls away. And so we go in because we're still there for final walkthrough. We're like, okay. So we walk in and we realize that this guy had changed the locks. He had mounted a TV. He had his Xbox set up. The fridge is filled with food. There's furniture that was not the seller's. This guy had actually broken in, moved in. There was a mail sent to the house in this kid's name and had fully just taken ownership. And, you know, having been in the business long enough, there's like, I think we all know that there's issues, especially once mail is getting sent there. Luckily, we didn't have to deal with any of that. But yeah, some guy just moved into my client's future home.
And we see really a 15-year-old, or was he older pretending to be younger? Or
no. So at the end of the final walkthrough, the kid's father showed up. I think he wanted to kind of smooth things over and make sure we weren't going to press charges, but for sure a minor. I don't know exactly how old he was, but he's definitely a minor.
That's incredible that somebody who's a minor would even have the wherewithal to do that big of a sort of transition. First, to know how to get into a property. Second, to then move in. And boy, that's incredible.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I haven't experienced anything like it since. And I don't actually know what like the takeaway is. Like maybe visit the property more often. But I think it was just a really unique situation. And maybe the kid maybe knew the people who were living there and saw an opportunity to get out of his parents' house and, you know, live it up for a couple of weeks.
Was the buyer spooked at all? Did it affect the closing or no?
This client in general was just very laid back. And in the end, I mean, even day of, we just laughed about it. We, you know, I was there with the inspection report and we made sure that nothing else was crazy. They got there's a relatively new flat screen on the wall.
That's amazing.
And we're like, what do we do with this? Who does this belong to? And I was like, I guess just like, we're not going to ask questions. I guess it's yours. Let me know if someone comes knocking on the door for it. And that was kind of the last I heard of it.
That's incredible. So you got a new TV out of the deal.
Yeah, exactly. I think you got an Xbox out of it too.
And some furniture. Probably.
There you go.
Although yeah. I don't know that I'd want furniture a 15-year-old would have, but who knows? Maybe.
That's a very good point.
And then you also had a story I'd love to hear about where you got into a street race, running away, from people. I don't know if this is a scary story, so I apologize for laughing, but I would love to hear the story.
It is a bit scary. So in 2010, 2011, when I had just started flipping houses, I entered into a business relationship with an investor on the south side. They would buy up single family homes on the south side. And, you know, having mentioned, I had my general contractor's license and real estate license, but I was only flipping one house at a time. And I had time on my hands, honestly. So I was looking for ways to kind of fill that time. So they would give me a list of 30 addresses and they had a list of criteria that, you know, they were looking for. And it was very, very specific. Like if the street is not wide enough, we don't want to offer. If there's more than X number of board ups on the street, we don't want to offer. So I had this rule where I would drive to the front of the house. And if I didn't feel comfortable getting out of the car, I just wouldn't. And they were cool with that. So I'm in front of this one house. I have like a clipboard and I'm looking out the right side of my car at this house, just taking some notes. And I turn to the left and there is a car with four young men in it, like pressed up, like almost touching my car to the point where I like cannot, like I was scared to even drive away to right. scratch my car. And I look at the driver and he's giving me the, roll down your window signal.
Ooh.
And I'm like shaking my head no. And I don't know, for all I know, they wanted directions or I don't know what they wanted, but I go into fight or flight and I'm on like 84th Street in Halstead on a side street. And at the time I was driving this little Volkswagen Jetta and I just floor it. And it's a narrow street and I start driving and they actually start following me. So they're racing right behind me.
Like your biggest fear is if I drive away, they're going to follow me. Yes. And then they do. Yeah.
Yeah. My biggest fear, we don't need to go there, but
right.
So I start driving and I cannot find a major street for the life of me. So we're like zipping down these side streets. And then eventually I think it was Halstead or something. And, you know, my heart is pounding. And I eventually drive home and nothing came of it. Maybe it was just for fun, but I doubt it. But that was, So the next day I stopped working for them. I told them it's not really, this isn't worth, you know, my life here. So, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure working for you. And that was it.
Yeah. I have a question too, because we have a lot of female listeners and, you know, they obviously, and this affects both men and women, of course, but certainly women need to be super conscious of where they go, who they meet with, and, you know, where they're going to be, you know, with clients. In particular, since you work with Zillow leads, you know, which again are largely, you know, perfectly safe and normal, but of course you never know. What advice do you have for people, you know, men and women who are maybe meeting a client that isn't a referral? Maybe they got it through a lead source like Zillow or just a random phone call or email, you know, as far as where to meet to sort of maximize safety?
Yeah, that's a really good question because, you know, I am handing off certain Zillow leads to people and I have that fear also. So we try to do it, if possible, on a Saturday or Sunday. Hopefully there's an open house, but I won't send, unless I'm like very confident that the person is legit, I won't send people unless it's middle of the day, Saturday or Sunday. But yeah, you know, DJ, I have to be honest with you. It hasn't been an issue for me, and I guess it's not an issue until it is. But I'm happy to hear your thoughts on it.
Yeah, you know, I don't have a ton of thoughts other than just meet in a public place, you know, and sort of assess the situation from there. So I know a lot of brokers meet people at Starbucks or coffee shops or really anywhere. If you need to meet a client and you haven't met with them and you're getting a goofy feeling, anytime you get any sort of feeling, that would be a good time to, you know, find a public place to first meet and sort of suss out the situation. And you could always walk away from a client too, of course.
Yeah. And you'd be surprised a lot of times, cause I take all the calls and I do all of the intake and you can tell really quickly if the person is a real buyer or not.
Sure.
And oftentimes, you know, if I do get that feeling, it's just like, okay, this guy isn't real. But the vast majority of people who are, especially on Zillow, who are moved to click on a button and be connected to an agent and then listen to our spiel and then schedule a time. Granted, they could be up to no good, but I haven't seen it at all yet.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. And just, you know, people just obviously need to use their best judgment and not try to avoid situations that could be potentially dangerous. And real quickly, so I just wanted to end with this one suggestion, because obviously you are very systems focused. You know, we talk about nurturing leads and staying in touch with your sphere of influence, your contact list. Do you have any just general advice or specific advice around how brokers should be staying in touch? Because I get that question a lot. It's like, well, okay, I have these 100 names in my CRM, and I'm not totally sure what to do with it. Do you have any ideas to help them?
It's funny you said that, DJ, because 2019 was my first year full-time, and I discovered this podcast probably the beginning of 2019. And I give myself a lot of guilt because I don't do flyers and I don't do cold calling and I don't do canceled expired. Sure. So what I would say is, like, whatever that person is comfortable with. For me, I've always been comfortable texting the people that I interact with on a daily basis. Like, everyone wants to text with me. So I don't overthink it. But going to your systems idea, I put in a date once a quarter to touch literally every single person in my CRM. Granted, the people who are active buyers or sellers, I'm reaching out to obviously daily, but you know, you have to systemize it or else you're going to drive yourself nuts. So I have a day in my calendar where that is, you know, every quarter where that is the day that I am reaching out to 50, 100 people. If it spills over to 2 days, so be it.
Yeah. Just have a process, I guess. And yeah, that texting is great too. This is so funny. So we use for when brokers want to meet with me to learn about our company, we use a scheduling system. And I realized this scheduling system, I won't mention it because I'm going to speak about one thing that they don't have, which is maybe it's not possible, but we send out these text reminders about the meeting. And there are lots of scheduling services that'll do that, which is so helpful. And so we send out like a day before the meeting, hey, quick reminder, you're meeting with DJ in a day. And then an hour before the meeting, we send out another one. Hey, just a quick reminder, you know, DJ looks forward to seeing you. And it's a simple little text message. We also send an email as well, just an automated system. But what I've realized is recently in the last year, I've had a lot more people that just didn't show up for the appointment, which is strange because they set the appointment. So I went, why would somebody not show up? That's so weird. Then I would call them and say, hey, just, you know, you missed your appointment. We can reschedule you, no problem. And they go, oh, I replied to your text. And then I went, oh, and then the system we use just doesn't allow for people, like they can reply and the person doesn't know that we didn't get it. So they think we got their text because of course people reply to texts all the time. So now I've realized I need to really find a system that allows for that two-way texting because we automate all that. And, but yeah, you're right. It's so smart to do it through text because that's the preferred method of communication for a lot of people. So very, very smart to stay in touch that way. And then you can start a dialogue on text.
Yeah. And I'm sure you know the stat, but I think like the open rates of texts are it's like 98% versus, I don't know right. What it is on email, but.
Yeah, about maybe 5%. Yeah. Well, for everyone who's listening, especially if you're in the Chicagoland area, Ben has a very successful team at Compass, obviously great company. And Ben's obviously and his team have tremendous, tremendous success in the last several years. And they're growing and they're looking for new brokers and an admin position as well. So, but in addition to that, for all of our listeners, maybe you're a buyer, a seller, an investor, a renter, anyone who's in the need of wanting to work with someone like Ben, or if you're a broker who wants to join a team like Ben's. Ben, what's the best way someone can reach out to you?
Kind of like what we just said, easiest way is text 847-452-9675.
Right. And you can also visit Ben, Ben's website, which is benlalez.com, Ben, LALEZ.com. And of course, links to his Instagram account, which everyone should check out because the content is really impressive. And you can also find him you can contact him through email that way, through his website as well. So Ben, thank you for being a dedicated listener to the show, which I did not know before you came on board. So it was really nice to know that it's been helpful for you and your team. I really appreciate the kind words there. And also, for being part of the show is really, really special to us. So we appreciate your time. I know how busy you are. So this is really an honor for us. And on behalf of Ben and myself, to all the listeners, you're the reason why we keep doing this. And Ben, of course, when we were talking with him before the show, he said, whatever I can do to help other brokers, that is what I want the message to be. So that's the kind of person Ben is. So we're super, super grateful. Ben, to you. And for everyone listening, one way that you can help our show is number one, to support our sponsors. But number two, to make sure that you tell a friend, right? Everyone knows another realtor who would love to increase their production. And that's what we do on the show. So definitely let other brokers, realtors, real estate agents, depending on what they call them in the state and city you're in, let them know about this show and, you know, have them subscribe. And also one last thing, since I'm asking for things, I'm just asked for one more. If everyone who is utilizing like iTunes or Google Play or Stitcher or Spotify, whatever you're using to listen to this show, if you could leave us a review, we would really appreciate it. So the more people we reach, the more interviews we can do, and we can continue to keep this train rolling. So Ben, again, thank you so much for being part of our show. Everyone go to benlalez.com. And if you want to join Ben's team, reach out. He'd love to talk to you.
Thank you so much, DJ.